Radio EcoShock.
Regular EcoShock listeners know wildfires in the Arctic are bigger and badder than ever. Scientists predict a huge increase over the coming decades due to changes in climate and various feedbacks triggered by global warming. Could the whole boreal forest burn down? New research has taken us deeper into fire behavior in the far north. The paper that caught my eye is titled Resistance of the Boreal Forest to High Burn Rates. Our next guest is one of the authors, Marc-André Parisien, is a research scientist for the Northern Forest Center of the Canadian Fire Service, located in Edmonton, Alberta. Mark, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Well, Mark, most of us can barely imagine the size and the way this great boreal forest is. How big is it, and what would it be like to be there?
Well, it's a pretty big place. It's about 1.7 square kilometers, so that's just over half of the landmass of Canada. And, of course, I'm very biased, but I think it's a wonderful place. It's very humbling to know that I'm hundreds of kilometers away from any kind of human settlement or roads, and I find it both scary and appeasing. It's a forest that's very green, where there's lots of water, and because it's so far north, there's all this great light all summer. But it's also a fire ecologist's paradise because it's a forest that's been shaped by large and intense wildfires. And when I was there in the last three years, we were working and living in the smoke for most of our time up in the Northwest Territories. Perhaps unpleasant for some people, but I thought it was great.
Did you mean 1.7 million square kilometers, or what was the size? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, it's 1.7 million square kilometers.
Okay. Now, as you know, television doesn't really report on fires in Canada's far north the way they do city fires, and most of these blazes run their course, as far as I can tell, with no one trying to put them out. How big can a fire get?
Well, they get huge, hundreds of thousands of hectares. So if you think of Manhattan, that's 9,000 hectares. There was a forest fire in Quebec a couple years ago that was recorded as 560,000 hectares. There's been several in the Northwest Territories and, of course, in Siberia this summer that were hundreds of thousands of hectares. They are very, very large, and altogether, they can burn millions of hectares in Canada. This summer, I guess we're at about 4.6 million hectares just in Canada.
So a single fire might be bigger than a European country, for example.
Well, 4.6 million hectares is quite a bit larger than Switzerland, so pretty fair chunk of land.
So looking at the future, what is the range of predicted increase in the area burned each year as we reach the end of the 21st century?
Well, it does vary a lot among regions and among studies, but the range we found in the literature was 30 to 500%.
That's stunning. 500%, that wouldn't leave much of the forest left, would it?
It would not.
Well, now, how do we know global warming is a big factor behind this increase in boreal forest fires?
Well, we know because the link between weather and its long-term average climate is pretty well understood. And because the highest recorded increases in temperatures have been observed at high latitudes, we've been able to track some of these changes and establish pretty solid correlation over the last 50-100 years. This said, climate's not the only factor. The boreal forest is an increasingly busy place, and humans are certainly affecting some of the fire regimes there.
And one of the key discoveries made, and this study was led by scientists from the University of Quebec, was to find a kind of braking system that could limit fires in the far north. We just talked about 500%, there wouldn't be much left, but maybe there's something that could stop that from happening. But before we reach that conclusion, can you tell us why and how you did this study?
Sure. So in the boreal forest of North America, it's been assumed that fires burn independently of the age of the forest stand, which is really the time since the last fire. In other words, forests that burned just a few years ago are just as likely to burn than those forests that burned 100 years ago. Now, it's been our intuition that this is not the case. Recent burns do indeed limit where and how future fires burn. This may be irrelevant where there's not a whole lot of fires on the landscape, but it may be very important in those parts of the boreal forest that have been just plastered with fires over the last few decades. So we set out to sample one of those areas by reconstructing past fires. And specifically, what we looked at is overlapping fires over the last 200 years, over 190-kilometer transect in northern Quebec. This allowed us to determine if fires tend to reburn or overlap randomly, or if recent fires don't burn quite as often as would be predicted by chance alone.
So from your research, what is, if any, the limit to the amount of forest that burns?
Well, it's safe to say that the influence of weather on fire is pretty well understood. We know that fires burn when it's hot, when it's dry, when it's windy. What's less well understood is the likelihood of what it is on the ground, the vegetation, to burn. And this study, I believe, provides a piece of that puzzle. Basically, in our study area, forests that burned 40 to 50 years ago are less likely to reburn than older forests. So when you've burned, you've got a few decades there where you may still burn. This study is not saying that it is impossible that young forests reburn, but they do at a much lesser rate than old forests.
Okay. Now, moving to a different topic, when I interviewed Dr. Michael Flanagan a couple of years ago, he told us fires can burn so hot and so deep, perhaps into the peat in the ground, that the soil is sterilized, leaving nothing to grow back. Have you seen or heard of this phenomenon, and is it a concern?
Well, in various parts of Canada, I've heard of areas being deforested. In fact, I've seen many of them. And that's not only in peatlands, but also in upland forests. If these situations become more common, there's no doubt to me that people will start getting concerned, whether it's from a standpoint of socioeconomics, carbon dynamics, or protecting the ecological integrity. And some of these areas truly look like moonscapes. You've had a fire, say, 20 years ago, and another fire not too long after that, and the trees just don't have time to rebound, and there's no seeds on site to regenerate.
And I understand some fires can even create their own weather systems, complete with winds or even thunder. Can you tell us about that?
Well, absolutely. It's just mind-boggling how much energy is transferred in some of these large fires. Fires can create a really impressive convection column that just rolls onto the landscape and indeed creates its own weather with sometimes rain, sometimes lightning, and sometimes even fire whirls, which are little fire tornadoes.
You wouldn't want to see one of those close up.
No.
All right. Now, for me, the key here is whether this balancing of forest and wildfires that you talk about in your paper could save the boreal forests as a functioning ecosystem, even with the abnormally hot temperatures we expect to develop in the north over time. Have you given that some thought?
Yeah, and there's no easy answer here. I think it's hard to tell because fire is not the only factor. You can have some major changes in hydrology, in tree growth, in the distribution of forest pests, like mountain pine beetle. If you think of a major thaw of permafrost, for example, that'll have huge impacts on your ecosystems up there. And fire will invariably interact with these altered systems, and they'll create new, novel forest dynamics. But what are the outcomes? They're highly uncertain.
So we're rolling the dice. We don't know what's going to happen.
We know part of the story, but incrementally, we're trying to figure it out.
Would your research apply just as well to forests and fires in Siberia?
You know, I'm not sure. The Siberian boreal forest is a different beast altogether. It's quite different from the North American boreal forest. So I think we can be cautious and say, to what extent does this negative feedback apply to the Siberian boreal forest? We don't really know just yet.
And I want to pick up on something that showed up in a couple of blogs. It appears from satellite photos taken in early August that there was a wildfire right near the Laptev Sea in Siberia. That's so far north, there are no trees. How would a fire be possible there?
Well, it is possible. And we're also seeing more and more of these fires in the tundra in North America. Basically, if all the ingredients are there, an ignition source, biomass to burn, and fire-conducive weather, any type of vegetation can experience pretty large wildfires. And perhaps you don't have a lot of trees burning up there, but you can have a lot of peat burning, you can have a lot of shrubs burning, you can have a lot of grasses burning, but they do seem to be becoming more and more common.
This is Radio EcoShock with my guest Marc-André Parisien, a research scientist with the Canadian Fire Service. Mark, in our winter of 1997-98, gigantic peat fires in Indonesia propelled that country to become the world's third largest source of greenhouse gas emissions. It was a huge burst of carbon, and then burning peat was also found in the deadly Russian heat wave of 2010. Could we see another big burst of carbon if Arctic peat catches fire on a big scale?
Possibly, but I think there's a lot more peat burning in the boreal forest than in the Arctic per se. And during those big fire years in the boreal forest, so years like this year, the boreal forest is a fairly important carbon source rather than a carbon sink. So it emits more carbon than it actually assimilates.
And are you aware of any scientist or paper that has attempted to calculate the amount of carbon going into the atmosphere from wildfires in Canada's north?
Yeah, there are several researchers working on this. One of them is a colleague of mine, Brian Amiro. At the Canadian Forest Service, we try to calculate emissions from fires. So I've got some colleagues, Ron Hall, Werner Kurtz, that are working on this. And there's also several American colleagues that are working on this question, folks like Merit Turetsky and Eric Kashishki. So it's a very important field of study, and I think we're getting closer to understanding it every year.
Does Canada offer statistics and satellite photos online for the public so we can tune into this?
Absolutely. So we've got a fairly nice site at the Canadian Forest Service, if I'm allowed a little bit of blatant self-promotion. It's called the Canadian Wildland Information System, and I'd be happy to give you the web link if you'd like.
I would like that. If you could send it to me, I'll put it in my blog at ecoshock.info so people can tune into it. It's probably got quite a long URL, does it?
It does have a fairly long URL.
Okay.
I'd better just send it to you.
Send it to me in email. I'll stick it on the blog at ecoshock.info. So listeners, you can pick it up there every Wednesday that blog gets published. So I've been reading about the feedback loops from forest fires in high latitudes. For example, soot can blacken the snow and ice. That leads to earlier melt, longer fire seasons, more fires. Are there other feedback loops, and are scientists trying to study these complex effects of the fires?
Well, nature often has lots of checks and balances and that create positive and negative feedbacks. And there are some groups working on that. They're fairly complex models because nature is fairly complicated. But I would say that generally the jury is still out whether fires in some cases can create net warming or net cooling, because there's certainly all kinds of feedbacks that can affect your fire carbon dynamics here.
Right. I mean, smoke from fires actually reduces the amount of sunlight reaching the surface of the ground for a little while anyway. So that's a bit of a cooling effect there.
Yeah. Now, is it a negligible or a measurable effect? I'm not sure. I'm not a carbon guy per se, but I have a kind of a general knowledge of what's going on.
Okay. Now, are there differences between a wildfire in the boreal, such as you study, or even further north, compared to the big wildfires we've seen this year in California or Washington State?
Well, keeping in mind that wildfires are extremely variable, I would say that, yes, there are fairly important differences. One fundamental difference is that boreal fires tend to kill most of the trees, whereas fires in the dry forest of the western U.S. Do not. There's more of a mixed severity there, kills some trees, but many of the bigger trees do survive the fire.
That's an important difference. So, Marc-André Parisien, if we determine the boreal forest ecosystem is in danger from increasing wildfires as the world continues to heat, is there anything we could do to intervene or to prevent or fight these fires?
Well, given the size of the boreal forest, our mitigation actions would only be limited and fairly localized. However, some of the bigger threats to ecological integrity may not come from the forest fires, but change in the physical environment, such as permafrost melting or forest pests, or simply the climatic stress on plants. And I think that's an active area of research.
And looking at the whole fire system in the north, in your opinion, what kind of research still needs to be done as a priority?
Well, that's a little bit in the eye of the beholder, Alex, but I think we need to pursue our work on how to better understand where, when, and how fires tend to burn. Once we have a greater knowledge of these dynamics, we can predict the changes to come and derive some sensible adaptation strategies. Also, I'd say that given how important fire is to the boreal forest dynamics, we need to know more about the human impacts on fire regimes. My feeling is that as development accelerates in the boreal forest, in some areas the anthropogenic impacts will dwarf the impacts caused by climate. So it remains to be seen.
Well, you know, of the things we've been talking about, one of the things that really interests me personally is the relationship of the forests and the permafrost. I've been to a lecture on permafrost melting. It's a long, slow process, but, you know, you get these things like drunk forests where the trees fall over because their whole root systems have been disturbed by the melting of the permafrost.
Yeah, and I think we can expect to see much, much more of that in the upcoming years. And it'll be very interesting to see how fires tend to burn in those areas. Some of them have meters of peat accumulation, and it's one thing to observe, study, fight a fire that you can see, but a fire that's burning underground, just smoldering deep in the peat with pretty much no smoke, well, that's another ballgame altogether.
What are you going to be working on next, Mark?
I'm going to be working on predicting fire refugia. So I want to know these parts of the boreal forest that almost never burn or that burn not as intensely. I think that these areas can act as holdovers or stepping stones for a lot of the species of plants and animals as the landscapes, the regions around them change very rapidly.
That sounds really worthwhile to me. Our guest has been Canadian forest research scientist Marc-André Parisien. He is an author on the new paper, Resistance of the Boreal Forest to High Burn Rates, and that's published in PNAS, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and the official data publication is August 4th, 2014. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock. Join us next week on Radio EcoShock. Get links to stories in our programs this week from our show blog at ecoshock.info. You can find all our past programs as free MP3 downloads at our website, ecoshock.org. Don't forget about our SoundCloud page. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening, and thank you for caring about our world.